Before we dive into today's episode, I want to share an exciting opportunity with you. The Breaking Free Workshop will teach you a step-by-step guide to turn your passions into profit. Join us for a transformative experience where you'll learn how to smash through your career plateau with a personalized plan in 5 strategic steps, avoid common mistakes that could be holding you back, and identify critical actions for the next month to accelerate your progress toward your goals. Don't miss this opportunity to take control of your career destiny and create the lifestyle you desire. Your first workshop is free. Register now for the Breaking Free Workshop. Visit smashingtheplateau.com/workshops for all the details. That's smashingtheplateau.com/workshops.
I'm not going to hyper-specialize and declare myself the coach for left-handed introverts who were born in the first half of the year and just keep everybody else off of my coaching docket. I will tell you that I enjoy almost all of the work that I do because I think in the initial process of discovering whether working with somebody is going to be a good idea, you get a sense of these things. And so the work to me is enjoyable and it's fulfilling.
Today on Smashing the Plateau, we're delving into the transformative powers of executive coaching with the communications leader turned coach and facilitator, Alan Heyman. With over 2 decades of experience in public, government, and nonprofit communications, Alan has mastered the art of helping introverts thrive in an extroverted world. We'll explore the pivotal moments in Alan's career that led him to embrace coaching after a complicated role at a global nonprofit challenged him to his core. You'll learn how an accidental discovery became Alan's calling and how he now leverages his diverse experience to guide senior managers and executives across various sectors, including education, healthcare, fintech, and more, towards realizing their fullest potential. Whether you're an emerging leader or at the zenith of your career, Alan's story will inspire you to look at your own journey and consider the power of coaching to navigate through complexities and institutional dynamics. Plus, he'll share valuable insights on the business side of coaching, from finding your niche to the often overlooked yet crucial importance of cash flow management. Get ready to listen to Alan Heyman's fascinating transformation from communications expert to founder and facilitator of Peaceful Direction, and how he's now impacting lives all around the globe. Now let's welcome Alan Heyman. Alan has a knack for coaching fellow introverts, helping them find their superpowers in an extroverted world. He spent more than 2 decades in public, government, and nonprofit communications, leading teams from 2 to more than 100 people. Alan, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, David. Appreciate that kind introduction and want to meet the guy who wrote it.
Well, I think I know who he is. And one thing I know about him is that he was inspired by a career transformation that was brought about with the support of an executive coach. And I'd love to hear a little bit about that career transformation.
True story. So I know that both you and I are old enough to remember those late night TV commercials where we had the gentleman holding up the electric razor and saying, I liked it so much, I bought the company. My story is somewhat similar in that I was leading communications for a large global nonprofit here in the DC area where I live. And it was a very complicated role with a lot of moving parts. And I needed some support to be able to make sure I could succeed in that role. Ended up learning what executive coaching was almost by accident because one of our executives at the time was going through a process of becoming a coach. And it became pretty obvious in my conversations with her that this was something that I needed. So I connected with one of her classmates. I became this person's second ever paying client. And we're talking about the pre-Zoom days here, and we were in different states. So I would come home, you know, evenings when we were scheduled for a call and call her up on the phone. So we did all our work by telephone. And the bedrock thing that I got out of that very early coaching engagement was pretty simple, but it wasn't easy. And it was understanding the difference between my stuff, and we're all walking around with our own stuff, and the institutional stuff that was never going to change. And once I had that distinction in my head, I knew what I needed to do, which was to leave the organization and find somewhere else to work, which I ultimately did. And then years later, when the opportunity arose to go to coaching school, I remembered the experience that I had had. I realized that coaching truly brings together all the different things that I've really enjoyed from throughout my career. And I decided to have a go of it first in an internal position and then ultimately starting my own business as I did in 2019.
Yeah. At what point in your career was that first story where you were going through the career transformation with a coach?
This was probably the apex of my career, looking back at it now. It was the most complicated role that I had, with the largest budget, the largest number of people to supervise. The roles that I had afterwards were kind of smaller and more specialized. And it was dealing with some of the complexities of that role and the institutional dynamics that really brought me into coaching as a client in the first place.
So if you hadn't had that coaching experience as a client, what do you think would have happened in your career?
A really, really interesting question. I think I would say outcomes may have been somewhat similar, but arriving at those outcomes would have been much more difficult, much more painful, much more time consuming, because I would have been learning those lessons myself rather than having a co-pilot along the way to help me learn the lessons at the same time. So I'm not sure that I would have turned out any differently, except for the fact that, of course, I had the experience of going through coaching as a client. So maybe I don't end up as a coach, as a professional, having had that experience if I didn't.
Mm. And then fast forward to today, what kinds of clients do you serve?
I serve clients pretty much all across the economy, which has been a great treat for me because I spent most of my career in nonprofits and government agencies here on the East Coast of the US. And in coaching, I'm working virtually and I'm working all over the world in education and healthcare and fintech and even frozen foods, in addition to government and nonprofits that I'm used to, and leaders who are pretty much at the, I would say the senior management to executive level. Although I've been taking part a couple of times a year in leadership development programs that are cohort based for emerging leaders at big companies. And I really enjoy that work as well, because you can have a lot of impact on people if you get to them early in their career.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about different methodologies for doing the kind of coaching work that you do?
Absolutely. And I will say that I'm a great student of many different approaches, and I tend to take on a new certification or a new learning program once a year or so, just to have new tools in the belt. So what I don't typically do a lot of is bring a lot of structure into most of the coaching engagements that I do. I like to co-create the structure with the client and meet them where they are, rather than sticking to a model, let's say, of leadership development or a set of competencies, and to bring in the bits and pieces from the different experts that I've discovered as the engagement demands it. And the reason for that is that I have seen so many times with clients, we've started in one place intending to go somewhere, and then we take a different turn along the journey. And that could be, you know, you've been promoted, or your boss is gone suddenly and you have somebody new that you're reporting to. So plans change during the course of a coaching engagement. And I've found that it really helps the client if I'm adaptable as they're adapting.
Mm. Can you talk a little bit about where you are in your own evolution as a corporate refugee?
I can. And maybe I'll pile on as a refugee from government agencies and nonprofits at the same time. We'll take corporate in the broad sense.
I use corporate in a very broad definition. To me, a corporate refugee is someone who has spent many years working in some kind of organizational setting where there is, right, where there's a team of people to take care of the things you're not responsible for. Very often, somebody else is responsible for business development. You're responsible for your discipline and producing solutions to whatever problems your discipline solves. And then when you go out on your own, that team is gone.
Yes.
You're responsible for business development. And not only that, but you also have to market and sell something that you've never had to market and sell before, which is yourself. So even if you, right, even if you had a sales role in the company, it's very different selling the product or service of the company that you work for than it is selling yourself.
Agreed. And these are transitions that we're very familiar with, aren't we? I like to say that from day one, you realize that the good news and the terrifying news is that there's nobody but you. And for me, this has been a journey, and it continues to be a journey in the sense that I don't think the evolution into business owner is ever going to be over. I also think, given that it took me almost 25 years to start a business and be self-employed after working for other people that entire time, there are many aspects of organizational life that I don't miss, honestly. and that I cannot see myself ever going back into. This is great. This is such a change, and it fits the way that I work and the way that I live so well compared to many instances of organizational life that I had that were less than ideal for those purposes. And I think the more recent evolution that I've been grappling with or working through for the last couple of years, let's say, has been this notion of what happens when you get to the point where you're not able to or don't want to do everything yourself anymore. And that comes with engaging outside support. So for me, I've engaged with other coaches to take on projects that are bigger than I can handle by myself, or if they want to give people a selection of coaches to work with. I've taken on a virtual assistant who helps me keep the business organized and keep the engagements on track so I don't have to have everything living up here in my head all the time anymore. And I have bookkeeping support for the first time, which is something that I was doing by myself and almost happily doing so for a few years because I don't mind doing it. And in fact, when I was a much, much younger person, I was doing a little bit of freelance bookkeeping on the side just to help pay the bills. But the question isn't, can you do it? Or even do you enjoy doing it? The question is, does it fit where your business is for you to be doing it yourself anymore? And for me on bookkeeping, the answer was no. But it took me a while to get there. Some people start out with a bookkeeper because they know it's not their strong suit and they want to, you know, outsource it from day one. That wasn't me.
Yeah. I'm a big believer that you should delegate what you're not good at and also what perhaps you shouldn't be doing because it's, as the business owner, your business would be stronger and probably more profitable if you spend your time doing other things.
That's right. It's an investment. And by the way, there's a bit of irony here in that I spend a fair amount of time working with my coaching clients on issues they have related to delegation. And I feel like as a business owner, I had to relearn how to delegate all over again compared to when I was leading teams within organizations. So that has been a journey. But I think your point is absolutely well taken in that if I can spend a couple hours a week doing my own invoices, but it takes me a mindset shift to go from coaching into invoicing, isn't that better for somebody who spends all day long doing invoicing and that's just a little bit of incremental extra work for them? I think it's more efficient, it's probably less prone to mistakes, and it's just better all around.
Absolutely. Alan, what's important to you? And with that in mind, what kind of business are you trying to grow?
At the moment, I am really pleased and feeling incredibly fortunate with my one-on-one coaching work, both directly with individuals and through organizations. Always happy to speak to a fellow introvert or somebody who's looking for some kind of a professional transition. And this is the year that I'm really trying to grow my facilitation practice. So I'm working with groups a lot more. I'm doing retreats. I'm doing executive board meetings. I'm helping people map out solutions to problems together with the traditional standing in front of a whiteboard type of facilitation and also Lego serious play, which is a methodology I learned last year and really enjoy working with.
Mm. How do you navigate the intersection or maybe alignment between what it is you like to do and what you think you're best at with what you're seeing as the market demands?
Create as much of that overlap as you can, as much as possible, I guess is my short answer. And to your point, I think when we start out in this work, there is a tendency to want to just try everything and do everything, to say yes to it all. And I did that. One, because I was not at all convinced that this is something I could do for a living successfully until I actually started doing it. And two, because you have to take some time to figure out what speaks to you and what you like. And it took a while for me to get there. So I'm not going to hyper-specialize and declare myself, you know, the coach for left-handed introverts who were born in the first half of the year and just keep everybody else off of my coaching docket. I will tell you that I enjoy almost all of the work that I do because I think in the initial process of discovering whether working with somebody is going to be a good idea, you get a sense of these things. And so the work to me is enjoyable and it's fulfilling. And to the extent that once in a while that proves not to be the case, it's usually the exception rather than the rule.
Yeah. No, I think, you know, figuring out what kind of niche you want to occupy is not so simple. And it's not necessarily apparent early on. And sometimes it's not so apparent further into your business evolution.
Right, right. You have to be able to make the request as in, hey, friends and people I've just met recently, this is the sort of thing that I'm looking for. But that could be fairly general. It can also change. And you can also represent different things to different groups of clients. For example, I've had a fair number of clients who have had me help them through the process of getting ready to leave a job. That's not the sort of thing that a company is going to hire me to do for their employees. So I need to be a little bit flexible in terms of how I represent myself to different groups of people as well.
Right. You have to be cognizant of who the buyer is, what it is they want, what they're willing to pay for.
Exactly right. And that is, all three of those things could be different. It's a lot of variables.
Oh yeah, they could be very different. And I'd love actually to hear your take on what coaching programs either provide or don't provide in terms of guidance about how to develop a coaching business, which is different than learning the skills you need to be a good coach.
Very different. And I love the question because I think about it a lot. And I do work with coaches who are a little bit less advanced in their practice than I am, kind of on an informal basis. But when I went to coaching school, the business of coaching was almost an afterthought in the curriculum. It was an optional seminar that you could go to after the day's worth of coaching classes had already ended, if you wanted or if you were able. And of course, I did. My view personally is that that should be more integrated into the curriculum for coaching programs, because it's great to know the theory. It's great to know the practice. But if you can't operationalize it, then you're not going to hope to make money at it. And when I talk to newer coaches, I get way more questions about the business than I do about the craft. And I think it would be nice if we were not all out there making the same mistakes over and over again, but could learn from each other in some sort of way. And that's why I'm always happy to talk to newer coaches, or even coaches who are more experienced than I am, about what they're facing out there and things that we can try to tackle together. Because as you know from doing this work that you do for quite a long time, it can be lonely out there, but it doesn't have to be.
Oh, that's for sure. So I wonder, what you've just described in the coaching industry is also relevant to lots of other disciplines, where you go to school and you learn a skill. You go to law school to learn how to be a lawyer and to provide good legal advice. You go to medical school to learn how to be a physician. We've certainly seen how both of those industries, especially healthcare, has been upended in terms of the whole, like how you actually make a living as a physician or anybody else who's in the healthcare field. But this is true in lots of different disciplines. What you need to know to be a good practitioner is very different than what you need to know to be a profitable business owner.
Correct. And as in medicine and with coaching, there are different ways to do it. So I know in medicine, the practice companies are kind of evolving to scoop up the solo physicians and make them employees so they can focus on being the doctor and let somebody else handle the business overhead instead of doing it individually, doctor by doctor by doctor. The analog, I think, in the coaching business is that there are some people who've been doing this a long time who don't want the headache of the business development that you mentioned and all the bookkeeping and owning the relationships and that sort of thing. So they'll go work for a coaching company as a 1099 contractor and not hang the shingle of their own out there in the universe. And that's how they get all their clients. It's a choice. It does not pay as much, but it does give you access to lots of different types of clients across lots of different types of industries. Personally, I do a little bit of both. I find it's good to have a mix of revenue in that way, people hiring me directly and working through coaching companies and coaching organizations.
Yeah. I think actually you raise a good point that there are options as a coach or in any other profession, whether you're going to be solo, build a practice that's not solo, that you own, or work for one of the companies that feeds you work.
Absolutely right. And I think even before you start to answer that question, there's another question of what do you actually want out of this experience and out of the bottom line? So if the answer is, I must make a living to support my entire family doing nothing but coaching, you're going to arrive at a different result than, you know, I've been out in the working world for 35 years and I would just like to do something that I enjoy and put a little less pressure on my investments while I'm retired. Two very, very different models. I went to a marketing workshop a couple of years ago, and the person who was presenting was all about the razzle dazzle of marketing and this and that and the other thing. And it didn't take a lot out of the lessons there. But what I did take out was he said, you know, you're either in a growth business where you're pushing to you know, improve your revenue year after year and more clients and more growth and more this, or you're in a lifestyle business where you are essentially molding your business around the rest of your priorities in life that have nothing to do with your work. And I thought to myself, I love that distinction because I'm pretty sure what I have here is a lifestyle business, even though it's doing quite well. And I'm very proud of that. I'm not interested in growing, you know, a $2, $3 million coaching company here with dozens of coaches on the bench. I enjoy the size and scale that I'm at this moment. And I'm not saying that will never change, but for now, it suits me just fine.
Right. And thank you for mentioning that because it's a really important distinction. And yes, you can have a lifestyle business that is quite profitable, that meets the needs of whatever your lifestyle is, and has some additional money beyond that. You don't necessarily have to be growing a big organization in order to be financially successful in what you're doing.
That's right. It's not a choice you have to make, which is wonderful.
Right. But if it's a lifestyle business, and it's true, even if it's not a lifestyle business and is growing, you still have to be cognizant of what drives profitability and how much profitability you need to meet your needs.
Yes. And don't forget about cash flow. That's very important too.
You want to say something about that?
Absolutely. So one of the biggest shifts you make, I think, when you're going from being an employee within an organization to having your own business and being self-employed or a solopreneur is the money that comes in is not going to be the same every month. Even though if you're, you know, dealing with a household budget, the money that goes out is the same every month. So if you've built this on a steady paycheck coming in twice a month or every other week, you're going to need to do some adjusting to account for cash flow. You're going to need to make sure you've got a cushion in there for those months that you're not bringing in very much, if at all. And then you're going to want someplace to put the rest of it when you're having months that are really good, so you can save it for the months that aren't. And the hope is that it sort of evens out over the long haul. But from week to week or month to month, you know, your business income is going to be very different. And sometimes it's going to be hard to predict depending on how it's coming in and from whom and when.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about the emotion that goes in behind those months when it's not so clear how much it's going to be and whether, because you mentioned hope. I'd love to hear a little bit more about how you deal with the times when it isn't necessarily so clear that over the next X number of months, the cash flow is going to get sufficiently better to meet what you think you need.
I think that's a great question. And I think I would answer it as a combination of information and faith. So when I first started, what I needed really was proof of concept. I needed a few clients. I needed a little bit of success in the tank just to demonstrate to myself that I could make this thing go. I also saved up a bunch of money. We were fortunate enough to live well within our means for a number of years when I was working within organizations, and my wife was too. So I got to the point where if there were going to be a few months with no income whatsoever, that's terrible. That's something you never want to have happen, but we'd be okay. I left the cushion in place just in case, even though it's now almost 5 years later. So there is safety available if safety is necessary. That being said, I also started a practice of and got much better at actually projecting what revenue was going to look like for the rest of the year. This was not something I did when I first started. But now, as soon as I take on a new project, as soon as the contract is signed, I put it in the spreadsheet to project out, one, how much is going to be coming in over the course of the year, so I know what the total looks like, and from different types of sources. And two, what is that going to do to my capacity to actually deliver work? Because I don't want to get into a situation again like I did a few summers ago, where suddenly I had these dozens of clients on my roster and had almost no idea how they were going to fit into my schedule so I could coach all of them because I was saying yes to everything. So that's why one of the other reasons why I hired the virtual assistant was to help me kind of run that side of the business and stay on top of my capacity. So bottom line, one, a bit of faith just to hope you can do it and kind of have a track record and feel like it's going to be okay. And two, having a real sense as much as you can of what is going to be coming in over the next 6 months or the next year so you can plan based on that.
Yeah. And I'm also hearing some of your financial management skill that we talked about earlier coming into play here.
Yes. Yeah. It helps to have a little bit or to have somebody on your side who has a little bit to kind of help keep you organized and help you understand what's going to happen. And related to the earlier comment about contract coaching within organizations, those tend to pay after the engagement is over. On the private side of my practice, people pay up front and in the middle, half and half. So it's nice to have a combination of cash flow coming in different ways at different times, which smooths out those bumps that you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for mentioning that. Alan, how are you tapping into community to support your success?
Many different ways. And I've learned there isn't one definition of community and there isn't one community. But I love spending time with my local ICF chapter, the International Coaching Federation. And during COVID, I also tapped into a few other chapters that are across the country but do virtual programming. So I spend time with other coaches in community on a regular basis to talk shop, to see what they're facing in their practices, to trade stories, to trade work. And then once in a while, I'll also get involved with networks of people who have similar businesses to mine in terms of their size and scope. So the solopreneurs, because I've realized that the solo attorney and the solo accountant and the solo financial planner and the solo coach have a lot in common in terms of what they do on a day-to-day basis. And there's a lot of exchanging of information and also clients and contacts that happen in those communities as well.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Alan, first of all, congratulations on the transition that you've made in your career, making it successfully. Thanks for sharing how you've done that. I think that's really important for our listeners. And lastly, if somebody wants to go deeper with anything we've discussed or get in touch with you, access resources that you have, where is the best place for them to go?
Absolutely. So my website is peacefuldirection.com. You'll find a contact form. You'll find information about coaching and facilitation and also a free resource library. And I'm on LinkedIn fairly frequently as well. So that's a good place to catch up with me. I post on there. People can send me a message. I'm happy to have a conversation.
Great. Alan, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau, share a little bit about your story and share your insights. My guest has been founder, coach, and facilitator of Peaceful Direction, Alan Heyman. Thank you, Alan, for joining us.
Thank you, David. Great to spend some time with you today.
Making the leap from the corporate career track to entrepreneurial business ownership can be done more effectively when you follow a system. In our Breaking Free workshop, you'll learn the 5 steps to smash your plateau, craft a weekly progress plan, and avoid common mistakes. This workshop is for dreamers, risk takers, and those ready to accelerate their business journey. Your first workshop is free. Visit smashingtheplateau.com/workshops for details and to secure your spot in the next workshop. Don't miss out on this opportunity for a career transformation. That's smashingtheplateau.com/workshops. Join us on our next episode of Smashing the Plateau for more wisdom from industry leaders. Until then, keep striving, keep believing, and keep smashing.